Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, stories of true history. Later on, American Adventure from 1955. But first, the Cavalcade of America with a story called Venture in Silk Hat, an NBC episode from January 14, 1946.
Starring Franco Tone in Venture in Silk Hat on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. The DuPont Company presents Venture in Silk Hat, starring Franco Tone as James J. Andrews on the Cavalcade of America. James J. Andrews joined the Union Army soon after the outbreak of the Civil War, not as a soldier, but as an undercover agent. During the second year of the war, the 33-year-old West Virginian became the leader of one of the most daring secret missions of the Civil War, the Andrews Raid. Monday, April 7th, 1862. A murky, quiet day. There is a storm in the air. The soldiers of the 2nd Ohio Infantry encamped outside Shelbyville, Tennessee, are quiet but restless. Rumors of impending action ripple along the tented streets. In the quarters of General O.M. Mitchell, a tall civilian holding his high silk hat respectfully on his left arm bends over the general's map table, and with a slender finger he describes a circle of operation centering at Chattanooga, Tennessee.
General Mitchell, if you should march from your present position here at Shelbyville south to Huntsville, Alabama, and then detach a force and send them eastward to drive General Beauregard's Confederates from Chattanooga, East Tennessee would be liberated.
Mr. Andrews, that's a project near and dear to the heart of Mr. Lincoln. But what of Confederate forces south of Chattanooga? Wouldn't they come up and envelop us?
Well, given a few hand-picked men, I could burn the bridges along the railroad from Marietta, Georgia, north to Chattanooga. General Beauregard's Confederates would be deprived of their only railroad to bring up reserves and supplies.
If you can accomplish that, Mr. Andrews, we could take Chattanooga with little or no bloodshed. In fact, it might shorten this war immeasurably.
Well, I'd need at least six men, sir.
And the failure of your last mission might have been avoided if you had been given more support. This time, you'll have 24 hand-picked men.
Thank you, sir. Then, if we're to seize a locomotive, I'll need a train crew, several engineers and firemen, all of whom can pass readily for Southerners.
Very well, Mr. Andrews. You'll advise them that this will be a dangerous mission behind enemy lines, that they'll be in civilian clothes and subject to execution in the event of capture.
I will explain the hazard, sir, and the penalty of failure.
Mr. Andrews, this time there must be no failure.
This look like the place, Sergeant?
I don't think so, Ross. Andrews told me we'd come to a big clearing first, then a clump of trees.
Yeah, that thunder sounds like we're in for some rain.
A buddy of mine in camp says we're fools for going out with Andrews. He was with him on his last raid.
How'd they come on?
They failed.
However, by the grace of God, most of them returned safely.
They hang spies, don't they, Mr. Pittenger?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Mm-hmm. The minute we're through the Confederate lines in these civilian clothes, we are spies.
Yeah, spies.
Mr. Andrews is a striking figure in that high silk hat, frock coat, and gray-striped trousers.
Hey, looks more like a poet than a fighting man.
Well, nonetheless, he is a God-fearing man. There's something about him I like. His eyes, maybe. In spite of his previous failure, I have confidence in him. Oh, there's the clump of trees in the ravine beyond.
Yeah, that's it, all right.
From the look of things, we're just in time.
There's Andrews standing by the lantern.
Mr. Andrews, Pittenger reporting with Ross and Knight. 2nd Ohio Volunteer, sir.
Come closer, nice. Men, and be recognized.
Ross, sir.
Nice, sir.
All right, men. Well, we're all here now. When you volunteered for this duty, you didn't know exactly what it was. I want you to know it's dangerous, and there's every chance you may not come back alive. If there's any one of you who wishes to return to camp now, speak up and clear out. Thank you. I'm glad you'll all be with me. Men, our destination is Marietta, Georgia.
Marietta? Well, that's 150 miles south of the rebel line.
We break up into twos and threes and travel by different routes. You've been furnished with enough money.
Mr. Andrews, what if we're arrested?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that won't happen. But if it does, maybe I'll have enough influence to get you released. You see, gentlemen, I have spent considerable time in the South, establishing myself as a dispenser of quinine and other medicines to the Southern gentry.
Mr. Andrews, what do we say if they ask us who we are and where we're heading?
Well, tell them you're Kentuckians heading south to join some Confederate regiment. Now then, all you men should start talking as much like Southerners as you possibly can.
I ain't got no Southern accent.
Well, perhaps you'd better travel with me, Ross. I'll pass you off as my deaf and dumb brother.
He's dumb, all right.
Mr. Andrews, just what is the nature of our mission?
For purposes of security, I cannot give you the details until we rendezvous at Marietta, George, on Thursday. We must be ready to strike on the morning of Friday, the 11th. That's all for now, gentlemen. Don't forget, we meet on Thursday at the Railroad Hotel in Marietta. Good luck, everybody.
Thank you.
O'clock. Still no sign of them.
Here it is Saturday. We're a day late getting started, and five men still missing.
You suppose the Confederates caught them?
It's quite likely. We can't afford to delay any longer. By now, General Mitchell's forces will be in Huntsville.
Well, this downpour must certainly have delayed our troops.
Possibly. However, there are 20 of us, enough to see this thing through.
How are we going to seize that train at Big Shanty Station? When we come by there last night, the Rebs had a camp there a mile wide.
Mr. Andrews, wouldn't our chances of success be greater if we commandeer the train at some point closer to Chattanooga?
That would limit our opportunities. There are 16 wooden bridges between here and Chattanooga, and I'd like to burn them all.
Oh, my gosh, that's wonderful.
All right, men, we can wait no longer. You have your instructions. Get your tickets, board the northbound train quietly, and when the passengers and crew stop at for breakfast at Big Shanty Station, we'll seize the locomotive and a few cars and make for Chattanooga, destroying every bridge in our path.
That's a mighty big order for 20 men, Mr. Andrews.
Very true. But, gentlemen, if we accomplish our aim, the war will be shortened by many months, and countless lives will be spared.
Tickets, please. All tickets, please.
Well, that train conductor is sizing up everybody very suspicious-like.
That's part of his job. He's on the lookout for Southern conscripts running away from their army.
Sort of young for a railroad conductor, ain't he?
He's 26, been with the railroad 7 years. Oh. His name's William Fuller, now a captain in the rebel army on railroad duty.
Tickets, please.
Here he comes.
Don't speak unless you're obliged to.
You don't like my southern accent?
No.
All tickets, please. All tickets. Well, Mr. Andrews.
How do you do, Captain Fuller? Glad to see you again. My tickets, sir.
Thank you, sir. Chattanooga. Did you know that Mitchell and his Yankees are headed that way?
Is that so? Well, I don't expect to be there long enough to get tangled with them, Captain. Well, tell me, sir, will we have time to take breakfast at Big Shanty?
20 minutes, sir.
Thank you.
Now then, you, sir, your ticket. Thank you, sir. Chattanooga also, huh? You mind showing me your credentials?
I can vouch for this young man, Captain. My partner in the quinine business, Mr. Blake.
Mr. Blake? Where are you from, sir?
Mr. Blake is slightly deaf, sir. That's why he's not in uniform.
I see. Excuse me for bothering you. Got to be on the lookout for deserters. See you later, gentlemen. Tickets. Tickets, please.
Phew.
Not so loud, Ross. You nervous?
Paralyzed. I got a feeling he doesn't believe you.
Stop worrying. Now listen carefully. Knight and I will take over the engine as soon as Fuller and his crew go for breakfast. You board the engine with us as firemen. Pittenger will get the rest of our men into the boxcars and we'll uncouple the passenger section. You understand?
Yes, sir. I understand.
Big Shanty, all out for 20 minutes of breakfast at Miss Lacey's boarding house across from the depot.
This is it, Ross.
Are you ready, Chief?
All set, Mr. Knight. Well, men, shall we go and have ourselves a little breakfast?
Goodness gracious sakes alive. You were on time this morning, Captain Fuller.
Yes, sir, Miss Lacey. The General is the fastest locomotive on the road. 8 miles from Marietta in less than 20 minutes.
My stars. That engine deal of yours is burning up the rails. How fast is that, Mr. Murphy?
Matter fast, ma'am.
9 to 25 miles an hour.
Land sakes! What is this world a-coming to?
How's business, Miss Lacey?
With an army camp across the tracks, you need to ask? I don't mind them soldier boys eating us plumb out of house and home, but I wish they'd stop hanging around my daughter. Can't get a little work out of them girls. All they do is primp and fuss. Lucy! Stop your gabbing with that soldier man and fetch the ham side meat for our customers. Will you have gravy on your grits, Captain Fuller?
Yes, sir. Murphy, that's our train starting.
Yeah, it's a general.
Captain Fuller, Mr. Murphy, deserters are running off of your train.
That was a neat getaway, Mr. Andrews.
Oh, we took her right from under the nose of that Confederate sentry. Ran her right through a whole blamed army camp.
So far, so good, men. But remember, we've over 150 miles to go with much work to do.
Hey, look behind, Mr. Andrews. Captain Fuller and his engineer are chasing us on foot.
We certainly put one over on Mr. Fuller.
Hey, why the whistle, Knight?
Curve ahead. Might be a southbound train on this line. Can't be too careful, you know, on a one-track railroad.
We'll have to get hold of a timetable someplace. Hey, any tools on this train?
Not a thing for tearing up track.
What are we making now, Mr. Knight?
About 20 miles an hour. No load or nothing to hold us back.
Oh, they'll never catch us now.
Men up ahead. Looks like a section gang.
Section gang? Knight, get ready to stop. We need tools.
Yes, sir.
And Ross, keep an eye on Fuller.
Oh, he's better than a mile back by now and still legging it, I'll bet. I wonder what rank the captain will hold when this little episode is over.
We'll have to take on water at Cass Station.
Hey, Scott, as soon as we stop, drop off the train on the side away from this section crew and cut the telegraph lines.
Yes, sir.
Hey there, you men.
What's on your mind, Captain Fuller? Say, you're a stranger. I ain't never seen you before.
There's a lot of people you haven't seen. We're running this special through with supplies for General Beauregard. Chattanooga's been threatened by the Yankees. We want those tools you're using.
What do you want the railroad to?
Well, in case them Yankee patrols tear up the rails, we got to repair them ourselves. Pass them back to our work crew in the boxcars. Hurry, men. There's no time to lose.
We'll put them in the boxcar for you. Come on, Tom.
Good going, Mr. Andrews.
Did Scott take care of the telegraph?
He shinnied up that pole like a monkey on a stick.
Here he comes.
Tools are all loaded.
Good, then. Let's be off. Thanks a lot, boys. You have no idea what you've done for the Confederacy.
Hey, look back there. Here comes Captain Fuller, still on the run.
I must say he's got a determination about him.
And a very hot collar, I'll bet.
You don't suppose Captain Fuller and these hounds expect to catch an old fox like Mr. Andrews?
Not in a million years.
Listening to Franco Tone as Secret Agent James J. Andrews in Venture in Silk Hat on the Cavalcade of America, presented by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Operative Andrews and his Union Raiders have stolen a locomotive from Captain Fuller of the Confederate Army. As our story continues, Captain Fuller, determined to regain his stolen locomotive, runs up to the section crew.
Hey there!
Look, it's Captain Fuller running like all get out. Mr. Murphy.
Hey, what's the hurry, fellas?
Hey there. Have you got a push car?
You bet we have, sir.
Then get it on the tracks. A bunch of deserters have run off with our train.
Deserters? Well, I declare.
Hey, Fuller, they cut the telegraph line.
Murphy, this isn't the work of deserters. They must be Yankee spies.
Huh?
Get that push car on the track and let's be after them. I'll catch those Yankees if it's the last thing I do.
Hey, Mr. Andrews, there's an old freight engine up ahead on the turntable. Let's stop and put it out of commission.
No, no time for that. We're going to burn the bridge over the Etowah River.
What, in this cloudburst? I'm telling you, mister, she'll never catch.
Ram down the Johnson Bar, Mr. Knight. Full steam ahead.
Can't you fellows push a little faster?
Hey, it's uphill, Captain.
Look, the old Yoner's sitting on the turntable.
Yeah, with the steam up.
Come on, boys. We'll spin that turntable around and be after him.
We'll never catch a general with an old freight engine.
It's easier and faster than pulling this car. Let's go, boys. I won't have them Yankees laughing up their sleeves at me.
Now, we don't dare stop long here, men. While I'm talking the station agent out of a timetable, water up the engine and take on some fuel.
Okay, Mr. Randall.
Hey, you got the general out. Where's the regular crew?
My name's Andrews, sir. This is a special section. Fuller's coming along in a few minutes with the passenger section.
Funny, I didn't get no word about it.
Well, everything's mixed up now with General Mitchell and his Yankees running wild. We're hustling powder and ball through to General Beauregard. Gotta save Chattanooga from the Yankees.
I hope you make it. Mighty dangerous running with all these extra trains on the road.
Extra trains?
Yep. Since them Yankees got to Huntsville, Beauregard's been evacuating supplies and freight from Chattanooga.
Say, do you have a schedule of these extra trains?
Sure, right here. But it won't do you much good, though. There's so many specials are bobbing along the road every hour or so. What a way to run a railroad.
We'll have to take a chance. Thanks for the schedule.
Don't mention it.
Hurry it up, boys. Get that fuel loaded. We don't want to keep General Beauregard waiting.
Well, that agent back at Cass Station was sure right about extra trains. Been waiting here at Kingston Siding for almost an hour now.
One freight wouldn't have been so bad, but now a second one. If Fuller's still chasing us, this is his big chance.
We've been riding now for 6 hours, and all we've done is cut a telegraph line in two places and pile some ties across the track.
Well, I never dreamed of such ill luck. If only we'd been able to make this run yesterday when it was dry. Well,
I told you that he tow a bridge would never burn in all this rain.
Here comes the second freight.
Well, get ready to move, Mr. Knight.
Okay.
And don't spare the steam. All right, you men, pile out of that boxcar and get busy tearing up this track.
About time we do something.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
Whittinger, get busy, remove those rails.
Yes, sir.
Scott, cut the telegraph line again, and hurry, every minute counts.
Come on, give me a hand on the crowbar. We'll use it as a spike puller.
Hey, the rest of you men, load that wood in the rear car.
There's one spike out.
Here, you men, get hold of this bar. We'll pry up the rail, and the spike will come with it.
All together now.
Yep. Yeah.
There. That does it. Now let's get on the other rail.
Hey, there's another train coming.
That came from the south.
It's Fuller.
I'm afraid you're right. Let's go, men. Scott, the telegraph line taken care of?
You bet, Mr.
Then we're off. That track will stop them for a while. Let her go, Mr. Knight. Full steam.
Hey, Fuller. Look up ahead. There's a break in the track.
Stop the engine, Joe. Stop it quick. Them Yankees have tore up the track.
Yeah, it's a break in the track, all right. Now what are we going to do?
Start using our legs again. There's a southbound freight due along here in 20 minutes. I'll stop that. We'll shove the cars into a side and uncouple the engine and go after them again. They won't get away.
But you have to go in reverse. There's no turntable around here.
That's all right. We'll go in reverse, but we'll catch them. Come on.
Ross, keep your eye on that smoke behind us. They must have got hold of another engine.
I never seen such luck as them Southerners are having.
Fuller's not as big a fool as we thought. Knight, what's our speed?
We're slowing a bit. Need more water.
We stopped 3 hours ago. What's the matter with his engine?
Nothing. No engine will run full speed forever without water.
Fuller's gaining on us steady.
Mr. Andrews, there's one way to stop Fuller.
How's that, Knight?
Tunnel hills ahead. We can leave our engine inside the tunnel. That'd sure stop him.
Well, what about the bridges we're supposed to burn?
We gotta think of our lives. They're gaining on us.
Speed's dropping, Mr. Andrews. What about it? Don't you think we ought to leave the engine?
We've a job to do. The covered bridge over the Chickamauga's just beyond the tunnel. We'll be able to get there, won't we?
I think so.
Fine. Ross, work your way back to the last boxcar and set fire to it. There's some oil there. Rip the car apart. Spread the oil. Get a good blaze going. We'll leave that car on the Chickamauga Bridge. That'll stop Fuller, and it'll finish that bridge, too. Get going.
Well, we we're just wasting time standing here on the hill waiting for that bridge to burn.
Hey, look. Here comes Fuller's train.
Is the bridge on fire yet, Mr. Andrews?
Well, there's smoke coming from both ends. Hey, Ross, was that car blazing good when you uncoupled it?
Oh, good as you could expect. The rain had soaked right through it.
It's got to burn. It's got to burn.
They're slowing up. They're slowing.
Yeah, but look. They're going right on over the bridge. Oh, this will be the end of Captain Fuller.
Now, that man has courage, but he'll never make it.
Look. Look there.
Hey, he's pushing the burning car out. The bridge didn't burn.
We'll still give him a run for it. Let's go, Knight.
They're gaining on us all the time, Andrews.
I can see, Ross. Knight, what's the matter?
Running out of water, sir.
Slower all the time. What's wrong now?
Pressure's dropping fast.
Now we're all out of wood.
Hey, wouldn't you think they'd have to stop for water and wood, too?
They're in luck. I'm afraid we're not. We're running out of steam.
It's no use. Stop the engine, Knight.
Maybe we can ambush him.
Ross, get back to the boxcars. Tell the men to scatter. Sorry, boys. It looks like this is the end of the line.
Well, we've reached the end of the line, all right. The Chattanooga jail.
Yeah. The end of our line will be a rope's end when the court-martials are done.
We accepted the hazards when we signed with Andrews for the raid. The rain delayed us one day, or we might well have succeeded.
Yeah, it wasn't only the rain. It was that conductor, Captain Fuller. If it hadn't been for him, we would have made it.
And he's the guy we laughed at. Well, I don't know where he is now, but he's better off than we are. That guy sure had a determination.
Gentlemen of the Georgia Legislature, it is my honor today as governor of this state to present to you your fellow Georgian, Captain William A. Fuller, the man who has successfully foiled one of our enemy's most audacious attempts to bring destruction upon our forces, the man to whom the armies of East Tennessee and Virginia owe their very existence.
I wonder how long we're going to sit in this prison.
Listen a minute. They're bringing Andrews back from the judge advocate's office.
Yeah, it's the end of the line, all right. I can tell by the way he walks.
And still wearing that silk hat.
All right, you men. Stand back from the door. All right, get in there, Andrews.
Is there anything I can do for you, Mr. Andrews?
No. No, I think not, Bittinger.
Perhaps you'd like to read from my Bible.
Thank you, Bittinger. I know how you men must feel. I only hope you realize that I did the best I could.
No man can do more.
I appreciate your consolation, Bittinger. But I have failed. Twice I have failed my country. Perhaps someday this nation will find a way to unite again. Unite it to go on for tomorrow. My hope now is that you men shall be spared, that I may pay for my failure by walking to the gallows alone.
Be not afraid.
I'm not afraid. It isn't death a man fears. It's the realization that he dies of failure.
So, Mr. President, as Judge Advocate General of the U.S. Army, I recommend, on the basis of the report herewith submitted, that the Congressional Medal of Honor or suitable equivalent be bestowed upon the aforementioned James J. Andrews, faithful and courageous secret agent of this government. The award must regrettably be posthumously bestowed, for Andrews lost his life in this mission, captured and executed with seven of his band by the enemy, according to the rites of war in Atlanta, Georgia, on June 7, 1862.
Our star, Franz O'Tone, will return to our Calvin Cade microphone in a moment. And now, here is Rancho Tome.
Ladies and gentlemen, the March of Dimes began today. You and I are given the privilege of contributing and lending our support to the Infantile Paralysis Fund. I hope you'll remember to send your dime. It's a good way to help in the fight being waged every day around the clock against this terrible wasting disease. Send your dimes and dollars to your local March of Dimes headquarters. Do it tonight. Thank you.
Next week, Cavalcade will tell the hilarious story of what happened when the U.S. War Department decided to buy some camels for experimental use on the plains of Texas at the 4th Cavalry Base back in the 1850s. When the unsightly beasts got mixed up with a local pageant, a beautiful girl, and an attack by Comanche Indians, the cavalry base was rocked to its foundations. Our stars will be Joel McCrae and Lorraine Day when Cavalcade presents The Camels Are Coming. Music for tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Rancho Tone may be currently seen in the Universal picture because of him.
The Cavalcade of America, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from January 14, 1946. The distinct voice of Howard Duff was heard in that broadcast, and he would be known on radio just a few years later as Sam Spade. In the same month of that episode, he was heard as the Armed Forces Radio Service announcer for a variety of programs like The Cavalcade of America, Duffy's Tavern, Kay Kaiser's College of Musical Knowledge, also Suspense in that month, and a program called This Was a Hero, where in addition to being the Armed Forces Radio Service announcer, he played a small part as well. You're listening to an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for American Adventure with the story The Federal Lion, an NBC episode from November 17, 1955.
American Adventure. The University of North Carolina presents American Adventure. Written by John Ely, directed by John Clayton, American Adventure is produced and recorded by the Communications Center of the University of North Carolina, Earl Wynn, director. From time to time on these weekly NBC broadcasts, American Adventure will bring you stories about the birth and growth of this country, man's greatest adventure in time and space. Some of these stories will be about our American heroes, such as Cyrus Field, Thomas Wolfe, and next Thursday's program is about George Washington Carver. But tonight, there is a story about the Federal Lion. It is a true story, but none the more believable because of that. The Federal Lion was a gift of the Emperor of Morocco to President Andrew Jackson, and nobody knew what to do with him. Not even the consul at Tangiers, into whose keeping he first fell. It was no simple matter to inform the Department of State that the President of the United States now owned a lion.
Oh, no, 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 no. I suppose this message won't do either. Here, let me have another piece of paper.
We're out of paper, sir.
Out?
I dispatched a young man to buy some more in the market.
Oh, but I prefer American paper.
You have used all the American paper writing this message, sir. I believe, to be exact, this is the 87th message you have written to the Secretary of State.
Yes, but do you see this printed form?
Yes, sir.
An order from the President himself to accept no gifts.
Yes, sir.
Now I have to write Washington and say I have accepted a gift on the President's behalf.
Yes, sir.
Well, at any rate, I must notify Washington.
Yes, sir.
This last message I wrote, step back over there and read it to me.
Yes, sir. Over here, sir?
Yes, that'll do.
Dear Mr. Secretary...
No, wait a minute. Let me sit down and lean back as if I'm Secretary Van Buren. Now, you're an aide, and we're going through the morning mail.
Yes, sir.
Let me get in the mood. I've just given some thought to the French situation.
Yes, sir.
And to the English merchant marine problems.
And now you say this is a letter from the Consul of Tangiers, aide?
Yes, Mr. Secretary.
Well, read it. Read it.
Yes, sir. It is addressed to the Secretary of State and says... I have the honor to tell you that the highest gift within the power of the Emperor of Morocco has been bestowed upon the President of the United States. I had no alternative but to accept it.
The President of the United States. I had no alternative but to accept this gift, which is a giant male lion named Memoun Bashaw.
What? A lion?
Yes, Mr. Van Buren.
Go on.
The lion is something of a problem here at the consulate, as you can imagine. It is costing money to feed and care for the animal. And though I'm told he's a beautiful lion, you will understand, I'm sure, if I give my personal opinion, that his beauty hardly offsets other features which are not so attractive.
Here, let me see that.
Yes, Mr. Van Buren.
Why, this is amazing. That will be all for this time. Thank you, Aide.
There are some other letters, sir, and reports from abroad.
Yes, later, later.
Shall I answer the consul at Paris, sir?
Yes, we must get to that. But right now, I'd better do some thinking about this lion.
Do you consider it a serious problem, sir? I find it rather amusing.
So would I if I thought President Jackson would.
A lion?
Yes, Mr. President.
L-I-O-N?
Exactly. The very same, sir.
Oh, stop it, Van Buren. I've got no time for jokes.
And neither have I, Mr. Jackson. And this is no joke. He is a large male lion, and he's now owned by you.
I own no lion, sir.
He's a gift to you, Mr. President.
Well, I don't know what sort of game you're playing, Mr. Van Buren, but I'm not under any obligation to accept this lion, and I do not accept.
Yes, I see. Your attitude will, of course, endanger our relationship with the Emperor of Morocco.
Confound the Emperor of Morocco if this is his idea of a present.
But you realize that we have for some weeks been interested in a trade agreement with the Emperor?
Yes.
I hope that our Western aversion to lions will not come between yours and the Emperor's undying friendship, especially at this time.
Oh.
Your attitude could go a long way toward being disastrous, Mr. President.
Well, your attitude isn't exactly clear, Mr. Secretary. You act as if when I took the oath of office, I committed myself to accept whatever animal anybody in the world wanted to bestow upon me.
No, not quite anybody.
You act as if I should receive this lion as a favor.
Exactly, Mr. President, at the moment.
As if I should house this animal here in the president's house, or would you rather have me send it to the Hermitage in Tennessee?
I hope that we can keep our tempers on this, Mr. President.
Maybe we can establish a precedent with this lion. Maybe we can put him in one of the parlors here in the White House and so make it known to every emperor and bey and whatnot of the East that we would honor any gift of monkeys or elephants or tigers or anteaters which they may care to make. Perhaps this can be the start of a great national menagerie.
I believe that idea crossed the mind of our consul in Tangiers. At the close of his letter, he mentions it.
Well, he can reconsider, and so can you, Mr. Van Buren, and so can...
Mr. President, may I suggest, sir, that as in any case of difficult decision where precedent is not clearly established, that this matter be referred to the Congress.
Congress, huh?
Yes, Mr. President.
Sound idea. Take care of that, Mr. Van Buren. Send the matter to Congress.
But Congress was not to become entangled in this matter. They buried the problem quite deep in a convenient committee, and it was still there when they adjourned. Meanwhile, the consul at Tangiers awaited expectantly for spring, he and his household. And as soon as practical, the federal lion was put aboard the United States brig William Tell, which some weeks later put in at New York. The lion and two black Arabian horses, which the emperor also sent along, were transported noisily to Washington.
Gentlemen, I don't think we ought to take any more of this cabinet meeting to talk about that lion.
I'm afraid the emperor will be peeved, Mr. President, if his embassy here reports that the animal is being left in storage.
Well, where can we put it?
Oh, could you give it to somebody?
Oh, I might be able to get rid of it by attaching him to a post office appointment.
You can't give it to anybody, Mr. President.
What do you mean I can't?
First, it doesn't belong to you. You can't accept gifts without permission of Congress, or so the Constitution clearly says.
I know some members of Congress that'd jump at the chance to give me an African lion.
But until they do, it isn't yours.
Whose is it?
I haven't the slightest idea. Perhaps the Attorney General has an idea as to that.
Gentlemen, it is my opinion that Mamoun Bashaw
is a lion without a country. Actually, I believe a case similar to this came up in Jefferson's administration.
What sort of animal did they give Jefferson?
Horses. Arabian horses.
Oh, they enclosed two of those for you, Mr. President, with the shipment of the lion.
What did Tom Jefferson do?
As I remember, he sold the animals and put the money in the treasury.
Sold them without consent of Congress?
As I remember, yes.
That was unconstitutional.
Oh, well, what's a horse or a lion?
Nothing is insignificant in politics. You know that, Van Buren.
Mr. President, when the framers of our great Constitution put in this clause that you couldn't accept gifts without the consent of Congress, they had no idea, not the slightest, that a president would ever be faced with a lion.
Of course not.
Now, obviously, the proper action is to dispose of these animals by the simplest and quietest way possible and deposit the money to the people's account.
Confound, I thought you just told me I don't own these animals.
You don't, legally.
I'm to sell them without owning them?
Well, so far as the Emperor of Morocco, who is probably the owner at this moment, so far as he is concerned, you own them.
And how is Congress concerned?
Well, not even George Washington was ever sure of that, Mr. President.
I won't touch it. I don't want to discuss it anymore. If I don't own that lion, I don't own him, and I don't want him.
But the Emperor of Morocco...
And that Emperor had better keep quiet, Mr. Van Buren, or we'll not sign that pact he wants us to sign either.
It's we who want him to sign it, Mr. President.
Well, send this problem to Congress, Van Buren. Tell Congress this lion is a present to the American people from the Emperor of Morocco. And prompt action is necessary lest we hurt either of their royal feelings.
Gentlemen of the Senate's Committee on Agriculture, there's been a great deal of public comment about this lion, Mamoun Bashaw, and a couple of stud horses. This is not, or so it seems to me, one of our more important matters, so let's move right along. The House has passed a resolution authorizing the President to sell the lion and horses and put the money in the Treasury.
Mr. Chairman?
The Senator from New Jersey.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion which I will make before this meeting is adjourned to the effect that the lion should be presented to the proprietors of Peale's Museum in New York City, and the two horses should be given to some New York agricultural society.
Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman from Louisiana.
Mr. Chairman, these animals are public property and as such belong to all the people. Certainly they shouldn't be given to New York, the richest state in the Union.
I agree with the gentleman.
How's that, Senator Moore?
I said Alabama agrees.
Mr. Chairman, New Jersey is perfectly willing to give the lion to Alabama or to Louisiana.
Mr. Chairman, under no circumstances will Alabama accept that lion.
And then why do you object to giving it to New York?
But we will take those two horses.
Mr. Chairman.
I'd dearly love to have those two Arabian horses in Alabama.
So would we in New Jersey.
I wouldn't object to giving the lion to New Jersey, Senator.
One horse to Louisiana and one horse to Alabama. Perhaps we can swing that, Senator Moore.
Mr. Chairman.
All right, Senator Poindexter of Mississippi.
Mr. Chairman, let's not argue over a lion. I feel that in the light of the recent refusal of a European government to pay the debt which they justly, rightfully, and obviously owe us, that we give this lion as a gift to Louis-Philippe of France.
Hear, hear.
Is that in the form of a motion, Senator?
Let's give it to England. We haven't had a fight with England in quite a while.
Sergeant, would you close that door, please? Now, gentlemen, I think this is very funny, and of course I'm not trying to be an old fogey about this and object to humor, but we are senators, and this is the Senate's Committee on Agriculture, and we do have to give away or sell these animals.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator from Maine.
I wonder. I say I wonder. Now, nobody jump me before I'm through. I wonder if the power of Congress, under the welfare clause of the Constitution, extends the gratuitous gifts of public property of the United States.
Surely, Senator, you know that question has been before the Senate and the American people for 15 years.
The age of the question is not what bothers me, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if the animals do not have to be sold, since they are certainly public property.
But, Senator,
where in the Constitution do we find authority to give away public property?
Does anybody object to going along with the House resolution and have the president sell these animals?
What are you going to do with the money, Mr. Chairman?
Put it in the treasury.
You don't know that that's constitutional to take public property and sell it to replenish the treasury?
Well, that may be your opinion, Senator, but I...
Nothing in the Constitution would indicate that you can rob the public domain for temporary tax relief. If we need higher taxes, then let's vote on them.
Here again, gentlemen, we're digging up old arguments concerning government policy on public lands. This is a lie.
But we might set a precedent here.
I don't see that it matters much what sort of precedent we set as to getting rid of African lions.
What you can do with a lion, Mr. Chairman, you can do with public land.
I don't know what the gentleman's experience may be with public land, but he's certainly no authority on lions.
Well, it's my opinion that we can't sell this animal, no matter what we do with the money.
Why not?
Well, on principle of common law. In order to legally dispose of property, one must first be able to hold it. And I don't see anyone here who could possibly hold this lion.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Clay.
How many motions are before this committee?
I think only one, Mr. Clay.
Well, then, let me suggest, rather than move, this compromise, that we sell the horses and give away the lion.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Mr. Chairman, that will only ensure us of being either doubly wrong or half right.
Let's move to a vote.
First, to whom is this lion to be given? I think I voiced an opinion about giving federal property to any of the rich states of the Northeast.
Perhaps a western state would be a fitting compromise.
Who wants the lion?
Let's not worry about who wants the lion, gentlemen. Let's dismiss all this right now by putting it down that President Jackson is to dispose of the lion as he thinks best.
Excellent! Excellent!
What do they mean as I think best? I don't think best about lions at all. Why couldn't Congress dispose of this lion?
There were some political considerations, Mr. President.
Well, of course there were, but...
And I suppose they preferred to direct you to handle the matter, sir.
And who is Congress to send out any such directive? I'm not subject to the whims of Congress every time some potentate gives this country a creature.
Yes, sir.
The men who wrote the Constitution had no intention of empowering Congress to tie up the executive branch so that I could not administer the orderly processes of government.
Yes, Mr. President. I mean, no.
Where is this lion?
I don't know, sir.
Who's feeding it?
I don't know, sir.
Well, somebody has to feed it.
Shall I notify the Secretary of Agriculture, sir?
No, you shall not, nor anybody else in the executive branch. It's up to the congressional committees to feed him, it seems to me.
Yes, sir.
What color is he?
I believe all lions are brown, sir.
You know, it's a funny thing. I pass a problem to Congress and Congress back to me. I wouldn't be surprised if that lion doesn't end up the property of the Supreme Court. My aide said you wanted to talk to me about this federal lion, Mrs. Bumford.
Yes, Mr. President.
Now, I may have misunderstood him, but I think he said you wanted the lion.
Yes, sir.
Now, go on with your story, if you will. I'll be happy to listen to you.
Well, Mr. President, I represent the City Orphan Asylum.
Yes?
And I was wondering if a lion wouldn't be just the thing for the children.
Well...
This would make us the only orphanage in the world, so far as I know, that owns a lion.
I wouldn't be surprised.
He would be an excellent diversion for the children.
Yes, that's
and
true.
And he's something we could share with the Catholic orphanage here, too.
Uh-huh.
He might serve to bring us closer together. There are few enough ties between the Protestants and the Catholics, don't you think?
I never make comments on questions like that, Mrs. Bumford.
Oh?
I'm a politician.
I see.
In fact, the minute you said Protestant and Catholic, I began to think. Now, would the Catholic orphanage feel slighted if I were to give this lion to you and not to them?
Why, I don't know whether they want a lion or not.
I see. Maybe we ought to look into that. I tell you what I could do. I could give this lion to the two orphanages, and then it could serve as a real tie between you, couldn't it?
I'm not sure, sir.
At least as much of a tie as any lion can be.
Yes, I suppose so.
And then I would be clear.
Clear, Mr. President?
In fact, perhaps we could do more with this gift than we're planning to, Mrs. Bumford, in a political way, I mean. How about a parade?
Sir?
Yes, I can see a parade very clearly in all this. We can get the Army and Navy to furnish some music. We can call out a regiment or so of troops, put that lion in his cage on a wagon, and put the kids from the two orphanages in two wagons or more, perhaps on hay, like in a hayride.
Mr. Jackson, what are you saying?
You'd love parades, and I could put a big sign on the side of that lion's cage. Mamoon Bashaw, gift of Andrew Jackson to Washington City Orphanage Protestant and St. Vincent Orphanage Catholic. Then we could roll that cage right past the Capitol as the senators come out, the band's playing, you know.
But, Mr. President, could anyone see the lion through the sign?
Well, I'm not trying to show the lion. I'm trying to show the sign.
Why, Mr. President?
Oh, politics, I suppose. Get it, Mrs. Bumford. I'm just being a politician. I guess I ought to sit back down here and become president again. But I do love politics.
Don't you think, Mr. President, that politics makes us sort of comical sometimes?
Why, well, yes, I suppose.
It doesn't permit us to take our government seriously, does it?
Well, I tell you, ma'am, it tends to keep us from doing that, but I'm not so sure we ought to go around with the weight of government seen in the furrows of our brows. After all, this is a cumbersome system we've got here, in this or any democracy. All the checks and double checks and balances and passing around the problems.
Yes, but...
If we didn't smile sometimes, it might get to look stupid. Might start looking as if we needed a more simple system, one not so cumbersome.
Well, there's a little something to that, I suppose, Mr. President.
Might seem like we need a smooth operating absolute monarchy, which we don't want over here. Then I found that sometimes we laugh at what we're the fondest of. I've heard people laugh at our political confusion and muddiness, but it was an affectionate sort of laugh, as if to say, this is ours and we love it. Well, I'll be happy to give this lion to the two orphanages, Mrs. Bumford.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And then perhaps the United States government can get back to normal.
Just listen. Just listen.
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's addressed to me, Consul at Tangiers.
Yes, sir.
Dear sir, we are pleased to notify you that the lion you accepted on the President's behalf some time ago has been disposed of in the most practical way possible. You are to be complimented on your initiative as displayed in this particular matter.
Excellent, sir.
But you are again reminded of the State Department rule to avoid accepting any gift, no matter how delicate the situation. Van Buren, Secretary of State.
Yes, sir.
I tell you, clerk, make a copy of this and file one under citation and the other under reprimand.
One might think that this is the end of the story of the federal lion, but not quite so, because President Jackson gave some more thought to the orphanage proposal.
Give a lion to some kids like that? What if one of them gets too close to him? What if he bites one of them? Kids can't play with lions. He's not a kitty cat, you know. Be terrible for the little kid. Be bad publicity, too. No, I think the thing to do is to sell him and then let the orphanages take the money and buy ponies or something else that kids can afford to fool around with. Kids could ride around on ponies all right. Orphanages ought to have some ponies around the place. Don't you think ponies would be better than a lion?
So President Jackson ordered the lion to be sold at auction. And Mamoun Bashaw was bought by the Boston Menagerie Company for the surprisingly high price of $3,350. But then one would expect a federal lion to have a high price, wouldn't he? But even this is not the end of the story.
A lion, John?
A lion. I bought that lion. See him out there in the court?
You bought a lion?
Not just a lion, honey. I bought that lion. Look at him. Look at that head on him. I own him, honey. We own him.
Why, John?
I'm going to put him on display here at the inn. In this cage, right out there. You see, people are already gathering. Now, you watch and see. A percentage of those people will be in here directly to talk about that lion, one to another and to me. See, they're talking now. Then one of them will say, why don't we continue our conversation over a mug of ale? Get out the mugs, honey.
But, John...
I'll have to put an ad in the papers. Or perhaps he can advertise himself.
Yeah.
The Fountain Inn has a lion. Come and see him and have a drink.
And so the federal lion became, in a sense, an assistant bartender and undoubtedly lived a happy life in a world of beer, ale, wine, laughter, and song. And that's the end of the story. American Adventure is written by John Ely, directed by John Clayton, produced by the Communication Center of the University of North Carolina. American Adventure is a study of man in the New World, his values and his characteristics, who he is, what he believes. The series is made possible by the National Association of Educational Broadcasters and the Fund for Adult Education, an independent agency established by the Ford Foundation.
American Adventure, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 17, 1955 on NBC. And that draws the curtain on this hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVernier. It's been a pleasure.